It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this fifth day of December 2019. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we camp out on the interweb tubes. That's also where you should go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, madcap, real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours per night, Monday through Friday, in which this program is live. Program reminder. As of Monday, remember, we start at 5 and go to 8 instead of 6 to 9. 5 to 8 Eastern, 4 to 7 Central, 3 to 6 Mountain, and 2 to 5 Pacific Standard Time. Okie doke. Please make a note of it. But anyway, there's a merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza taking place at HeadOn.live in the chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live. Right now, for instance, if you were to jump right in, you would be eagerly greeted, warmly welcomed by Anatole and Jimmy and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing guild, a third stage guild navigator, he's staying Sparky for the time being. You don't just run around folding space for the hell of it. Right. Okay. So that's where things stand there. Also in the chat room, showing up as a guest mod, is Brother Deacon Asa for the time being. Thank you, Asa, for wandering by. I appreciate it. And every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and today is no different. Thank you very kindly to Kevin in Colorado Springs and Roberto. Thank you, Roberto. Thank you to James in Illinois, and thank you to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you all very kindly for being subscribers to the Horn and helping us keep the lights on and keep the program rolling. Thank you very much indeed, and thanks to Kyle down in Kentucky, Stan, for jumping in early on the program this evening. As a result of Joan jumping in the way she did yesterday, that meant that we only had $100 to raise this evening for Thorn in the Side Thursday, and now that $100 is only 90. So with only $90 to raise to stay even with the week, that's hopeful. That's hopeful. So thank you to Kyle for being an early supporter for this particular day of the month. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you very much. And again, thank you to Joan for knocking out half of it yesterday before it even became a thing. Thank you. So it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I guess we kind of got a little bit of a break after yesterday's drama. But that's not to say that there isn't an absolute boatload of stuff with which to deal today. See, we're in many ways, I think we're just sort of locked into this. Well, the United States of America right now is a dysfunctional. We're like a dysfunctional family. I always think about that line or those that idea that Tolstoy promulgated in Anna Karenina, where he says that all happy families are happy in the same way, but all unhappy families are unhappy differently. And the United States is one great big unhappy family right now. Yesterday in his testimony, when Jonathan Turley was doing his best to prop up Nitwit Nero and even failing in that regard, because nobody really can. The effort being made by the maggot freaks in the Congress are transparently awful. No one who isn't a maggot believes them. And even though Jonathan Turley cashed the check for being there, even he was in a place where, when put to it, he volunteered the reality that, no, Trump's Ukraine phone call wasn't perfect. It was far from it. That's a quote. And so, you know, we who care about the Constitution, we who care about the future of the Republic, we're unhappy. And the maggots on the other side are unhappy that everybody isn't just bowing down and doing as they do and worshiping the God the Looney Tunes God Emperor, regardless of the circumstances. As Sparky notes in the chat room, it's Don't Fuck with Nancy Day. Because that was kind of a big deal this morning. She had she made an announcement at 9 a.m. or thereabouts Eastern Time. Ah, darn it. Oh, I hate that. Ralph's beloved crook crossed the Rainbow Bridge today. Ralph says he wasn't feeling well. I took him to a local hospital, and the vet took an x-ray, and he had a tumor and bone cancer. I didn't want him to suffer, so my vet and I decided to let him cross the Rainbow Bridge. He was 20 plus years old. I'm so sorry, Ralphs. Because, well, he was family. Just because you got four legs doesn't mean that you're not family. And so I know your heart must be heavy with grief. And please know that the Horn Family Community Congregation shares it with you. So sorry, Ralphs. So sorry. And you did the right thing because you saved him untold agony and misery. And instead, he quietly went to a place that it would have been much, he went on a journey it would have otherwise been much more painful to go on. Our hearts are with you, Ralph. So sorry. Note coming in from Steve in New York, subject line, Nancy Pelosi. I'd like to make a motion that the family give Nancy Pelosi a cowbell because of how she slapped down that reporter. I agree. And let's check in with the audio, shall we? Because for good or ill, and, well, this program, to the extent that it will be out there as it ever has been for free in the future, it serves as a little moment-by-moment time capsule of what's going on from day to day. Let's check in. Let's begin the program by checking in with Nancy Pelosi this morning, because this was historic. And I'm betting it was good for 30 or 40 points on Nitwit Nero's blood pressure, both systolically and diastolically, because you know he was sitting there watching. And that's probably why she did it at 9 o'clock in the morning. Because remember, Chlamydia Claudius has executive time from whenever it is that his weird little eyes open till whenever it is that the docs get the dosage as close to right as they can, which means that he winds up going to work somewhere between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. Here's Nancy Pelosi this morning.
Over the past few weeks, through the Intelligence Committee working with the Foreign Affairs and Oversight Committees, the American people have heard the testimony of truly patriotic career public servants, distinguished diplomats, and decorated war heroes, some of the president's own appointees. The facts are uncontested. The president abused his power for his own personal political benefit at the expense of our national security by withholding military aid and crucial Oval Office meeting in exchange for an announcement of an investigation into his political rival. Yesterday, the Judiciary Committee, the American people heard testimony from leading American constitutional scholars who illuminated without a doubt that the president's actions are a profound violation of the public trust. The president's actions have seriously violated the Constitution, especially when he says and acts upon the belief Article 2 says I can do whatever I want. No. His wrongdoing strikes at the very heart of our Constitution, a separation of powers, three co-equal branches, each a check and balance on the other. A republic, if we can keep, said Benjamin Franklin. Our democracy is what is at stake. The president leaves us no choice but to act because he is trying to corrupt once again the election for his own benefit. The president has engaged in abuse of power, undermining our national security and jeopardizing the integrity of our elections. His actions are in defiance of the vision of our founders and the oath of office that he takes to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Sadly, but with confidence and humility, with allegiance to our founders and a heart full of love for America, today I am asking our chairman to proceed with articles of impeachment.
Pretty straightforward. And I have a feeling that every, you know, if you're over at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, or somewhere like, you know, or ONN, the news network that spills its news upon the ground, we all know that they're broadcasting to an audience of one, just as TASS and Pravda and Izvestia once did in the old Soviet Union. But sometimes our side has to do that too. And hence the verbiage and the way that was, that statement was carefully written indeed. And so now I think it is an almost lead pipe cinch that the House will impeach him. And now, of course, we have to engage in the navel-gazing and the hand-wringing and the pearl-clutching of having done their constitutional duty. Will the American people recognize that it was the right thing to do? That it not only was the right thing to do, but the necessary thing to do? And that's an open question. And, of course, the Monday morning quarterbacks are already out in force. Kurt Bardella, who serves as an expert commentator, having been counsel for a couple of Republican committees. And this is a good time to point this out. Tigers do not change their stripes. And neither do skunks. The for-profit media are awash in ex-Republican this and ex-Republican that. We've talked about this in the past, and I've kind of warned against putting too much faith in them. I mean, you can tune in MSNBC any evening and hear Nicole Wallace giving Donald Trump down the damn road. But the thing that always runs through my mind when I see one of those moments is, oh, just wait until there's a Democrat in office. She will return to her true form. Because remember, so much of the piss, vinegar, and vitriol that came out of the White House during the Reign of Error came through her. Sure. She had a hand in it. And Kurt Bardella was, if I'm not mistaken, he was majority counsel for one of the committees. I forget which. But that means he was a Republican. I mean, anybody who thinks that you can be neutral as counsel for one of these committees is fooling themselves. All you had to do was witness Lawyer Taylor's performance yesterday with his charts and his graphs and accusing all of those egghead professors out there of being a bunch of gommy goddamn liberals. Because that's essentially what he did. And I LOL'd watching that performance. I thought, you'll do anything for a nickel, won't you? But now, Kurt Bardella, and this, file this under hand-wringing, pearl-clutching, and navel-gazing, has written that, doggone it, the Democrats have hamstrung themselves because they're rushing the timeline. Oh, for fuck's sake. He writes, from the start of the impeachment investigation, Democrats put themselves at a disadvantage by making it known they wanted to conclude the entire process by the end of the year. Some Democrats were reportedly concerned about the impeachment process stretching into the presidential primary season, prompting recent headlines like Dems sprint to the impeachment finish line. Speaker Nancy Pelosi could, of course, take more time if needed, but even the perception of this timeline gives Trump the chance to effectively run out the clock. I'm not so sure it does. Again, and look, I don't like engaging in a bunch of speculation like this, but it's kind of hard not to sometimes. We have to cope with the fact that we live, like I said, in a dysfunctional time. And once upon a time, we looked, with a gimlet eye at the Soviet Union, because we knew that they would never tell the truth about the health of their ancient leadership. Oh no, here is glorious Soviet Premier Leonid Brezhnev lifting weights with his eyebrows alone. He is powerful man, Leonid Brezhnev. Powerful man of people takes time to relax at his country dasha. Meanwhile, Leonid Brezhnev was probably in a fucking coma. Yuri Andropov, all of those clowns. Well, now we find ourselves where they were. Anybody who knows beans when the bag's open knows that Nitwit Nero is not okay. But we also know that the White House will lie like a rug trying to avoid the reality. We still don't know the real reason, as I mentioned last night, we still don't know the real reason why he bugged out of the NATO summit so peremptorily fast. Was it because he got because he became a laughingstock? And that Trudeau and Macron and Johnson were openly laughing at what a jumped up rube, self-important rube he is? There's probably I'd give that 60% of the pie chart. But some portion of that pie chart also has to be whatever it was that sent him to Walter Reed, sent him home too. Because you can't have the President of the United States completely falling apart somewhere that you can't get him to a secure medical facility. I mean, if you had to, where would you take him? What's that huge U.S. military hospital in Germany? That's probably the closest that could take care of him within a secure and classified setting. Me, I figure we've played the wager. Now we let the chips fall where they may. And maybe something that needs to go out there to ameliorate the Kurt Bardellas of the world is to say, the investigations are continuing, and these guys want to have maybe we'll wind up having 6 or 7 Senate trials. Jonathan Turley said, you really can't impeach until you've got finality from a federal court. I never said that, but I said it is good to have finality from a federal court. So, hey, when some of this shit goes final, impeach him again. It can be like impeachment can become a yard full of rakes for Trump. And every step he takes, he bing, rake to the face, bing, rake to the face, bing, rake to the face. That can happen. So apparently, as the timeline now stands, I guess we're looking at articles of impeachment coming out as early as next week. And that's because I think it's safe to say that several of them have already been drafted and they're just being tweaked and tinkered with. And then, of course, you have to have the floor vote. And, Lord God, we will all need a Thorazine dart in the neck to get through those. Not through the straightforward fact-based part of it, where the Democrats make arguments in favor of impeaching this fucking crook. But no, the pout rage machine, the wambulance that the Republicans will crank up to 11. And rest assured, they all will, because they are disciplined, if nothing else. They will not, there will be no breaking of ranks. Clarity suggesting he shat himself in Europe. Septic tank service. Adderall May West. Jim noting, our gerontocracy, Bob. Well, that does seem where we're headed, doesn't it? Look, here's where we are. The only viable Democratic candidate who isn't a boomer or older is Pete Buttigieg. And he's not exactly setting the world on fire with excitement about his candidacy, because he keeps displaying this disturbing predilection for talking like what once would have been recognized as a liberal Republican or a moderate Republican. You know, the real kind, not the unicorn leprechaun kind that Susan Collins is so frequently referred to as being. It's not inspiring. Keith with a note. Subject line, Kurt Bardella. At one point, Kurt Bardella worked for that website that rhymes with light and fart. Oh, Jesus. Does anybody really want to... Can I get the ad hoc horn research department on that? Not doubting you, Keith, but I'd just like a little more confirmation. God damn, really? That's disgusting. Note from Kyle. Kyle says, I'll match the next $10 anybody contributes in honor of me giving up a habit addiction that's kind of in many ways ruined my life for the last 10 years, and as a token of gratitude towards this community, because I feel like family, even though I know none of you personally. So, hey, if somebody's got 10 bucks out there, Kyle will turn it into 30. He laid down the marker. He's got another 10 he'll kick in. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you so very much. And that would then take us down to only 70 bucks to go to get finished for this Thorn in the Side Thursday evening. Note from Darlene in Connecticut. Asked if she hates Trump by that asshole reporter. Darlene in Connecticut says, I'm sure you saw this from the same reporter she has called Mr. Republican Talking Points. Yeah, let's do go and do that. It's worth hearing. And Darlene warns, spoiler, annoying commercial precedes. Yeah, of course it does. And it comes from Time magazine. Here, let's get it queued up.
Do you hate the president, Madam Speaker?
I asked a question.
Representative Collins yesterday suggested that the Democrats are doing this simply because they don't like the guy.
I have nothing to do with it. Let me just say this.
I think
the president is a coward when it comes to helping our kids who are afraid of gun violence. I think he is cruel when he doesn't deal with helping our dreamers, of which we're very proud. I think he's in denial about the climate crisis. However, that's about the election. This is about the election. Take it up in the election. This is about the Constitution of the United States and the facts that lead to the president's violation of his oath of office. And as a Catholic, I resent your using the word hate in a sentence that addresses me. I don't hate anyone. I was raised in a way that is full, a heart full of love, and always prayed for the president. And I still pray for the president. I pray for the president all the time. So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
Damn. And, of course, Mr. Trump talking point is, of course, James Rosen. And we know that there's not a hell of a lot to James Rosen, because James Rosen, every couple of weeks, cashes a check from Sinclair TV. You know Sinclair TV. that agglomeration of that massive corporation that owns a shit ton of TV stations and radio stations around the country, that forces its own local affiliates to run propaganda pieces praising Donald Trump as if Sinclair was, oh, I don't know, state-run media in the DPRK, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, North Korea, who, by the way, with Nitwit Nero making the remark, this is just further proof of, you know, what a fucking idiot he is. He said, I saw that North Korea shot some more rockets up. That's why I call Kim Jong-un. That's why I called him Rocket Man. And so I saw in the last 24 hours that the state-run captive media there has said, well, it looks like we may have to start referring to Donald Trump as dotard again. Maybe they stopped in the name of diplomacy or something, but Jesus, he's never stopped being a dotard. But yes, James Rosen of Sinclair TV is a schmuck. And that was a question that was specifically designed to get a particular response. And it got a response not only from Nancy Pelosi, but from Chlamydia Claudius, too. Immediately, he has no sense of strategy or anything. So immediately after she took that maggot to task, James Rosen, he took to Twitter and said, Nancy Pelosi just had a nervous fit. She hates it that we will soon have 182 great new judges and so much more. Stock market and employment records. She says she prays for the president. I don't believe her. Not even close. Help the homeless in your district, Nancy. USMCA. Nancy's actually trying to move the USMCA through the Congress, much to the disgust of the progressive wing of the party. And it's not... That disgust is not entirely unwarranted. Because, among other things, the complaint is that, you know, that's the new NAFTA, USMCA. Is that she's working harder on that than she is on a bill that would help more Americans become members of unions. And it's troubling. We certainly do wish that there was, you know, more pro-union sentiment but she's trying to get it over there, whereas the bill that's in the House and won't even be brought up for a vote, apparently, that would allow more people to join unions is just laying there. There it is. There's the story I was looking for. Common Dreams published a piece. Using comments from Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington, She's a co-chair of the House Progressive Caucus. The bill, which is called the Protecting the Right to Organize Act, has been sitting on Nancy Pelosi's desk since it passed out of committee on September 25th. And Representative Jayapal said, I don't know exactly what the holdup is. It's taking longer than it should, given the number of co-sponsors that we have. The PRO Act has 215 House co-sponsors. That's very near to the number needed for a discharge petition. But I doubt if they want to cross Nancy Pelosi that way. A journalist by the name of Ryan Cooper wrote an article saying that he's grinding his teeth so hard they snap off at the roots, because this pro-labor bill is just gathering dust, while actually Nancy is working on USMCA, and the USMCA is deeply troubling. Because, as usual with these international trade deals, it lacks worker protection. Speaking to The Intercept, Representative Jayapal said many other bills have come to the floor with fewer co-sponsors than this one. It's a nasty little manifestation of that centrism that is the hobgoblin of our side. The centrists in the caucus saying that, the USMCA could be a good example of bipartisan compromise. Pay attention. Organized labor hates the bill, because it'll do, for all intents and purposes, it'll do the same thing to organized labor that NAFTA did. And we need to be aware of that. Oh, thank you, Barbara. Yep, Kurt Bardella and his girlfriend worked for Breitbart until Corey Lewandowski assaulted her in 2016 at a rally. She was a reporter, and Lewandowski bruised her arm. Well, I'll be dipped. And Bardella shows up on My Filthy Morning Habit, and interestingly, they always font him as a former counsel for a Republican committee. Steve in New York said, man, oh man, did Kim roll the orange oath. There's not a lot to be proud of in that, though, because it's so damned easy. It does itself. Good idea coming from Elbert in Rhode Island. Hey, Bob, send the House Judiciary GOP people a secret message. If you want the whistleblower to testify, we will insist that Trump be the next person to testify under oath, or in his case, under oath. That could be fun. Sure. And there are other things to deal with this evening, but you know how I feel about those nasty, embarrassing stories that come out of West Virginia. Remember, we are the canary in the coal mine. We're still, if not the, next to the Trumpiest place in the country. Want proof? Well, how about a class of corrections officer trainees, prison guards, and they'll work at the regional jails and the state penitentiary system all over the state. It's basic training class number 18. And it's causing no small amount of Sturm und Drang, using German for a reason, because 37 of them sitting in their class photo have been photographed, yes, of course, because it's West by God Trump Virginia, they've been photographed giving the Nazi salute, the stiff arm salute, Sieg Heil. And big old Governor Jim Justice, West Virginia's lone billionaire, well, he wants an investigation, and he wants anybody found in, who to have been involved to be fired. The Associated Press reporting that those involved have been suspended. Now, remember, these are trainees. It's kind of disgusting that the West Virginia Department of Military Affairs and Public Safety has released a photo showing them giving the Nazi salute. But they only did so after blurring out the faces of the people giving the Nazi salute. Here, let's make it a little clearer. The West Virginia Department of Military Affairs and Public Safety blurred out the faces of the Nazis. I'm going out on a limb here, but these guys sat for a photo in which they had no expectation of privacy, and they gave the Nazi salute, and the people of West Virginia, for good or ill, deserve to know who the Nazis are. Nazis don't get to be, don't deserve to be, Nazis in secret. They need to be Nazis out there for us all to know about, so that we can all make sure that the Nazis never have a fucking job again. It's hard to tell. Almost all of the faces and all of the hands appear to be pink, but there is one that appears to be brownish. Jesus Christ. It had a title and everything. West Virginia Division of Corrections and Rehabilitation Basic Training Class, number 18, 21 October through 27 November 2019. I guess this is their goddamn graduation picture. And it has a title above it, all caps, Hail Bird, BYRD, as in Robert C., who was never a Nazi, not one goddamn day in his life. Of course, all the Repiglicans, they immediately, yeah, look at that, Robert Byrd was in the Klan. Yeah, for a couple of years, and spent the rest of his life apologizing for it. Openly repented himself of it. I hope there's a journalist out there who's working on getting the names of the Nazis. See, just down the mountain from me, you go down the mountain, you turn right, and you turn left, and the next thing you know, you're up on top of a sheared-off mountain, and you are at the Mount Olive State Penitentiary. Some of these Nazis would be going there. And here's a fun fact. And I'm not trying to talk out of school or anything. But my son went to school with a kid who Ferg informed us, and he himself later informed us, thought Hitler was a pretty good guy. And I about had a purple polka-dotted blue speckled conniption when I heard about that. And that kid went on to become, wait for it, a corrections officer. Yeah. And so the odds of this being a one-off are pretty narrow, pretty scarce. And Ferg told us when he got out of his season in hell that there is a portion of the facility he was in that is referred to as Valhalla. Valhalla being the ancient Norse afterlife, the hall of the warriors where the mead flows forever and, you know, all of that bullshit. And it was called, that unit within the regional jail was called Valhalla because that's where they maintained a more or less little Nazi confraternity within the facility. And to call it a jail is, well, it's Orwellian because, you know, it's got pods and all of that. And it serves as a central repository for all the counties around. 5-6 counties, I'm not sure how many. It is much more like a prison than a jail. But like any other prison system in the country, our prison system is all Nazied up. Clarity says, they just can't work for the government. They can sort recycling for a non-profit. Yeah. But when it comes to Nazis, it's like roaches. If you see two or three scurrying around when you happen to turn the light on in the kitchen at 3 a.m., you got 10,000 back behind the baseboards. Unless there be any mistake about this, yes, I'm comparing Nazis to fucking cockroaches. Vermin. Disease-bearing filth. And while we're at it, I actually have more respect for cockroaches because they are fulfilling a biological and evolutionary imperative. Cockroaches don't choose to be cockroaches. Nazis choose to be Nazis. And here's the fun part. You don't get into a corrections training class, without passing some fairly significant background checks. Can't have a, you know, criminal record as long as your arm or anything like that. Can't have a criminal record. You got to be law abiding. These guys are probably registered to vote. And they probably do vote. Want to guess how they vote? Here's a hint. There's no guessing required. There's just not a shit ton of people who voted for Hillary in 2016 who run around giving the Nazi salute. This is a Venn diagram. One circle says Nazis, and the other circle says Trump voters. And in the case of these people with their blurred out faces in the photograph, it's the same circle. Now, what's that, Brother Deacon Asa? It's not nice of you to degrade cockroaches like that, Bob. Cockroaches don't genocide. Plus, they have the decency to fuck off when met with sunlight. Well, like I said, I've got more regard for cockroaches. And besides, they're going to run this planet in about 10 million years. They're going to be 6 feet tall. They're going to be sentient. Hell, who knows? They may communicate by waving their antennae at each other and making those clickety-clackety noises. But however they go about it, they will acknowledge us and revere us as gods. Because we will have been the ones who prepared the way for them, who made the Eden in which they live. Jesus. Nazis. I need to dig into that a little bit more. Oh, and I was mentioning Nitwit Nero twooping earlier today. In addition to having a shit hemorrhage about Nancy Pelosi, earlier, about 10 hours ago, you know, a little bit before Nancy Pelosi was due to speak,
the do-nothing Democrats had a historically bad day yesterday in the House.
No, they didn't, really.
They have no impeachment case and are demeaning our country.
No, dummy, they're charging you with high crimes and misdemeanors.
But nothing matters to them. They've gone crazy. Therefore, I say, if you're going to impeach me, do it now, fast, so we can have a fair trial in the Senate.
Yeah, fair trial and Senate are two, they shouldn't appear in the same sentence. Bub, you want a fair trial? It should happen in a court, a federal court, with criminal jurisdiction. And it may yet.
And so that our country can get back to business. We'll have Schiff, the Bidens, Pelosi, and many more testify, and we'll reveal, for the first time, how corrupt our system really is. I was elected to clean the swamp, and that's exactly what I'm doing.
No, dummy, you ran on drain the swamp. Not clean the swamp. What's next, fuckwit? Rake the swamp? This shitbird can't even remember his own propaganda. And then, of course, in the wake of what happened yesterday with the impeachment hearings, three prominent psychiatrists delivered a petition to the House Judiciary Committee today. It had more than 350 signatures on it. And that petition said that the deteriorating mental state of Tangerine Tiberius could result in what they called catastrophic outcomes, including nuclear war. Some of the petition language read as follows. We bear in mind that Donald Trump, as president, has the unfettered authority to launch nuclear weapons at any time for any reason. Bandy Lee, John Zinner, and Gerald Post led the effort. Short of this calamity, there are many other dangers he can pose by the use, fueled by rage, of his assumed absolute executive authority and by the loyalists who serve him. His detachment from reality, his pathology, is actually gaining ground more quickly than the ability of rational actors to bring up the facts. And this petition was truly in the sense of the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. They said, take these danger signs seriously and constrain his destructive impulses. We have come to the conclusion that there is an ethical obligation to warn of the danger that President Trump poses. We believe that there is a possibility of our stumbling into a war. Impeachment is the ultimate rebuke of a president, which President Trump has intensely feared, at least since the appointment of the special counsel. We and many others are available to give important, relevant recommendations, as well as to educate the public so that we can maximize our collective safety. They cited Section 7.1 of the American Psychiatric Association's ethical guidelines, which says that a psychiatrist, mental health professional, has a duty to serve society by advising and consulting with the executive, legislative, and judiciary branches of the government. Dr. Bandy Lee said Trump's ramping up his conspiracy theories, that he shows a great deal of cruelty and vindictiveness. His detachment from reality, his pathology, is actually gaining ground more quickly than the ability of rational actors to bring up the facts. They are having four constitutional scholars testify, but alongside the legal aspects, we must consider the psychological aspects. And see, this goes back to his tweets about we need a fair trial in the Senate. See, it's only a fair trial in the Senate because he knows that he has a majority there. But he doesn't, but here's the thing. He is so goddamn stupid, so utterly dim, so intellectually disabled, that he doesn't understand that just because he's exonerated in the Senate, he will not have been impeached. He will remain an impeached president. He will merely have been acquitted because the standards for impeachment are impossibly high for a conviction. And those standards are so impossibly high only because of a drafting error by the framers. In 1787, there wasn't a great deal of thought about this country reaching shore to shore. It would change, and it would change rapidly. Two things would happen at the beginning of the 19th century that would show that it was changing. On the one hand, Thomas Jefferson took a big steamer on the Constitution and awarded himself the unwritten ability to engage in a massive purchase of land. We call it the Louisiana Purchase. And it immediately tripled the size of the country. And he had no constitutional authority to do it. At the same time, Aaron Burr, who, in terms of the early history of the Republic, fascinates me probably more than any other individual, because of the degree and extent to which so many went to make him our American Satan, our serpent in the garden, when in fact that person may actually have been Thomas Jefferson. Aaron Burr was accused of wanting to invade Mexico for purposes of overthrowing the Mexican government and establishing himself as king or president or what the fuck ever of Mexico. And both of those things taken together manifest the beginnings of what would later become manifest destiny, in which white men and women in this country declared that Almighty God wanted the United States to stretch from sea to shining sea. And it was nasty. It would go on and manifest itself in the Texas War for Independence, in the Mexican War, and in the plans that would be developed with no snickering at all by the Confederacy to invade Cuba, Mexico, and eventually conquer South America and establish the entire Southern Hemisphere as a slave hemisphere. It's all right there in history. You don't have to believe me. You can go and read about it for yourself. It really, really happened. And so, this is all a matter not of isolated incidents, but of little mistakes that amount to a snowflake that turns into a snowball that begins rolling and eventually slides downhill as an avalanche. Because it's so difficult to remove a president from office, because in 1787, the idea of getting 2/3 of 26 senators wasn't that crazy a notion. The political party system had not fully developed. What Madison bemoaned as faction had not completely taken hold. It would take hold before the end of Washington's term as president. The country would split into Federalists and what were known as Jeffersonian Republicans, and they would go at each other with a bloodthirsty will, literally killing each other from time to time. Some of that was remarked upon in the hearings yesterday. You think it's bad now? We killed each other back then. And lo and behold, here I am, little old me, behind a little old microphone at a little old radio network, talking about that 2 weeks before the highfalutin law professor starts talking about it. You want to be ahead of the curve, this is the place where you want to be. Cowbell, please, says Silent R. Lamar. The reason Trump left early from the NATO summit is because somebody informed him they weren't going to pay the entertainment. Yeah, they were going to stiff the hookers. And not in a good way. Jesus. Hey, thank you, Dave. Thank you very kindly. Dave has met and exceeded Kyle's challenge. So that means we are now down to only $40 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. Shucks, we could be done with fundraising by the halfway point of the program, and wouldn't that be awesome? Thank you, Dave. Thank you sincerely. But that's all. Fair trial in the Senate. Have you ever been in a room with 100 people in it? I have. Have you ever tried to organize a meeting for 100 people? Have you ever tried to pick a lunch or set up a menu for 100 people? Hint. It will drive you mad. Because 100 people can't agree on anything. I mean, let's say it's a choice between chicken or fish. 67 people probably won't choose chicken or either chicken or fish. Now, put the future of the republic in place of the choice between chicken or fish, and you get an idea as to how godforsaken difficult, even without an entirely corrupt Russian-influenced National Ruble Association paid-off Republican Party, how difficult getting a two-thirds majority to convict is. And it's sad. Truly sad. Because the future hangs in the balance. And we know, even without having seen whatever articles of impeachment are generated, we know that the charges will be rock solid. That the only way to vote no on them will be to expose oneself as a rank political operative and a pathetic white wing, white supremacy supporting, white supremacist supporting lickspittle. That's it. That's all. And the stuff that the psychiatrists wrote about is appalling. It's the stuff of which waking up at 3 a.m. in an ice-cold sweat is made of. We bear in mind that Donald Trump, as president, has the unfettered authority to launch nuclear weapons at any time for any reason. I shared that earlier. There is no formalized way of preventing this unless his order is disobeyed by the commander of the U.S. Strategic Command, who has been given the order to launch. Short of this calamity, there are many other dangers he can pose by the use, fueled by rage, of his assumed absolute executive authority and by the loyalists who serve him. Then this. There are many things we can say about the psychology of Donald Trump. He is remarkably transparent through his Twitter stream of comments, real-time video displays and newspaper accounts, past and present, as well as testimonies of persons who knew or have known him. He has shown that his sense of worth is entirely dependent on the admiration from others, such as at the rallies of his base. Without this external affirmation, President Trump has revealed that he feels deep down like a loser, a failure, weak, dumb, fat, ugly, fake, crooked. We know this because these self-denigrating pictures of himself President Trump projects onto others, whom he transforms into enemies and compensates consciously by creating a grandiose image of himself as a unique, a stable genius, entitled to special treatment, and better at everything than everyone else. We've all known these kinds of people. And generally, we despise them. Because they were despicable. Consider what he tweeted that I shared a moment ago about Nancy Pelosi.
Nancy Pelosi just had a nervous fit.
Well, we have tons of first-hand accounts out of the White House of Donald Trump having those on the daily and on the regular. It's all projection. Do you remember during the debate when Hillary said, correctly, that Trump is Putin's puppet?
Not a puppet. Not a puppet. You're the puppet.
That's all he had. Because he's otherwise pitiable, disordered mind couldn't come up with anything else. Not a how dare you. Not a that's disgusting. Not, lady, it takes a lot of nerve to blah, blah, blah. No, nothing. All he could come up with was something that a second grader, you know, a C student second grader would say.
Not a puppet. Not a puppet. You're the puppet.
Wow. The psychiatrists go on to point out what makes him so dangerous is the brittleness of his sense of worth. Any slight or criticism is experienced as a humiliation and degradation. And of course, these things have to be carefully taught. These are things that are formed in childhood. A mother who won't give enough attention, a father who slaps a little boy around. To cope with the resultant hollow and empty feeling, he reacts with what is referred to as narcissistic rage. He's unable to take responsibility for any error, mistake, or failing. His default in that situation is to blame others and to attack the perceived source of his humiliation. These attacks of narcissistic rage can be brutal and destructive. A striking but not unusual example of his lack of caring and empathy is his policy of separating children from their parents at the southern border. Oh, by the way. Because, well, that's something that's been happening for a while now. You know, this is a reminder that no one group can save us from this tyrannical monstrosity. It's going to take the lawyers. It's going to take the doctors. It's going to take it's going to take the engineers. It's going to take the retail workers, and it's going to take the people who the service people in restaurants and ditch diggers and concrete finishers. It's going to take all of us. But in two cases here, we have the doctors stepping up. Doctors on Long Island, according to Reuters, say two migrant children showed up at their hospital in seriously ill condition, at least in part because their asthma medication had been taken away by immigration authorities at the southern border. Dig it. You show up fleeing for your life, and they take albuterol inhalers away from little children who can't breathe without them. The families of the children indicated that they had albuterol in their possession that was confiscated and replacements were not supplied. Because see, if your concern is that, well, okay, this toddler here that's got this inhaler, you know what? We're making America great again here, so we just want to make sure that that's not a fentanyl inhaler. So you confiscate it, and you replace it with a known good. But fuck no. Not the thugs. Not the psychopathic monsters at ICE and Customs and Border Patrol. Fuck no. Well, you're in America now. You don't have to worry about breathing clean air. Fuck yes, you do. Our air is dirtier than the air in Guatemala. or Honduras. It was reported by Dr. Noy Halevi Mizrahi of Stony Brook University. They wrote a report, he's a co-author of a report in Pediatrics, the journal. We wanted to bring awareness to this topic. Our main message is one of advocacy. We wanted to make sure to alert other physicians who might be caring for these patients. The first patient was a school-aged girl with a history of mild intermittent asthma who had immigrated from Central America 2 months before she showed up in a Long Island emergency room with severe breathing problems due to unremitting asthma attacks. When examined, the girl was also found to have viral pneumonia, according to Dr. Halevi Mizrahi. A 7-year-old boy showed up in the ER also with severe unrelenting asthma attacks. He had a history of moderate persistent asthma, and he also had the flu. His albuterol inhaler had been taken away from him at the border as well. Both babies ended up in intensive care. And I'm going to ask you to just engage with me for a moment in a dream of a better world. In a better world, this, of course, would never happen because we wouldn't be putting children in cages and concentration camps. And we damn sure wouldn't be taking their medication away from them, medication bought perhaps with the last money that their parents had. But I'll go a step further. In a better world, the monsters who did these things would be charged, incarcerated pending trial, tried, convicted, and put away for a long, long time in order to consider the wickedness of what they had done. Dr. Halevi Mizrahi said not having an inhaler contributed to the severity of their clinical presentation when they did ultimately seek treatment. And, of course, they came to the United States of America, where the air is befouled with particulate matter from car exhaust, diesel fumes, but most of all from coal-fired power plants. And the particulates also come out of frack pads and natural gas-fired power plants. You know what doesn't give off particulate matter? Wind turbines! You know what else doesn't give off particulate matter? Solar panels. No particulate matter from hydroelectric turbines either. Doctors Halevi Mizrahi and co-author Ilana Harwain-Gadansky said that when pediatricians are confronted with similar cases of migrants sickened because their medications were confiscated and not replaced, they should report these cases to U.S. Customs and Border Protection Information Center, the Department of Homeland Security, Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties, or the DHS Officer of the Inspector General, so that all of those people can then throw it all in the fucking garbage because they're a bunch of goddamn Nazis who don't give a fuck about children in concentration camps. Sorry, that one got away from me. By way of advice, the doctors also said that, quote, pediatricians should feel empowered to work with representatives in Congress and their local districts. That seems like a fine idea. Reuters interviewed Dr. Albert Wu. He's an internist and a professor of health policy and management at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore. Oh, God, Bloomberg again. Maybe that should be the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg Really Short School of Public Health in Baltimore, Maryland. No, that was unfair. Dr. Wu, are you with me, Dr. Wu? One has to ask. Are you really just a shadow of the man that I once knew? Are you crazy? Are you high? Or just an ordinary guy? If Lady B's out there, I know she knows. Dr. Wu said, The confiscating of an asthma inhaler or other essential medication from a child seems cruel, misguided, and possibly criminal. I think this represents a direct assault on the health of people, and they are people crossing the border. This kind of behavior should be condemned and the workers punished. This is not who we are. And I guess that's where the bone of contention arises, isn't it? Every time one of these stories comes out, and every time I see someone opining that this is not who we are, I am compelled to say, the fuck we're not. It's not who some of us are. It's not who you are. It's not who I am. It's not who this liberal, progressive, Horn family community congregation is. But you know what? It's who 63 million Americans are. Because we kind of got bludgeoned with that yesterday, didn't we? No, they're trying to undo the votes of 63 million Americans who handed a second place finish in the popular vote for president in 2016, Donald Trump. If you voted for Donald Trump, you voted for that. If you voted for Donald Trump, you voted for children in cages. If you voted for Donald Trump, you voted for little children catching the flu in the United States and not being able to survive it. If you voted for Donald Trump, you voted for every last criminal, cruel, vicious, hateful, vindictive thing that has happened since January the 20th, 2017. Don't try to run. You can't fucking hide. The only way out of your wickedness, your evil, is to admit it, repent yourself of it, and beg forgiveness for it. That's it. Because, see, there was no good faith reason to vote for Donald Trump. There was no good faith reason to help him reach office. And by the way, if you stayed home because you didn't like the other candidate, you got a piece of this too. The only people who don't have ownership of any of this evil are the people who patriotically went to vote and patriotically picked the person who was not a tool of Vladimir Putin. Period. That's the only way you avoid being a monster is to not do monstrous things. Steve in New York. At which point does he start ranting about the strawberries? Well, hell, he's already done the part about the ice cream.
I get two scoops. Everybody else only gets one.
I mean, you realize that's straight out of the fucking Caine Mutiny, right? Crazy-ass Captain Queeg. Subject line, clean air in Sydney. Sunset, a photograph. Sunset, last night about 6 p.m. That's 2 days in a row. And Sydney spiders are now posting pics online of the face masks they wear. Sydney spiders? Is that a thing? I think that means people who live in Sydney are now posting pics online of the face masks they wear outside. It is, of course, coming up on the first day of summer in Sydney. What, we're 16 days away, is it? So this is late spring. This is these are those magical days when spring is beginning to roll into summer and the days are still getting longer. And in this photograph that Robert has sent me, at 6 p.m. in Sydney, with the sun still high in the sky, it is a red disc that you can look at because it has been filtered through so much smoke. Because Australia, as a result of climate change, the climate emergency, is on fire. I remember, oh, Jesus, what would it be? 34 years ago, an Easter trip down to Nag's Head. And there were massive forest fires on the mainland directly to the west. And the setting sun, I remember looking exactly like that over the condo rooftops of Nag's Head and Kitty Hawk. That was probably climate change, too. Because it has been going on for a while, hasn't it? Oh, back to the psychiatrists. We have come to the conclusion that there is an ethical obligation to warn of the danger that President Trump poses. We believe that there is a possibility of our stumbling into a war should, for example, the adventurous Kim Jong-un have further flights of missiles over Japan or another nuclear test. President Trump's need to demonstrate his strength as commander-in-chief and the praise that would come from taking strong actions could lead to a very unfortunate situation. Impeachment is the ultimate rebuke of a president, which President Trump has intensely feared, at least since the appointment of the special counsel. Failing to monitor or to understand the psychological aspects or discounting them could lead to catastrophic outcomes. For these reasons, we implore Congress to take these danger signs seriously and to constrain his destructive impulses. We and many others are available to give important, relevant recommendations, as well as to educate the public so that we can maximize our collective safety. Now, I can't say this for certain, but that's three leading psychiatrists and 350 co-signers of the petition. You know what's not out there? Because when I saw this story, I went and looked. 350 other mental health professionals signed petition saying, nah, Donald Trump's just fine. Definitely sane. He's definitely saying the president's slow in the driveway. Yeah, of course, Wapner comes on at 3. No. Of course, Judge Jeanine comes on at 7. Definitely Judge Jeanine. Maybe we actually need to have a hearing in the Judiciary Committee. Maybe Dr. Lee and a couple of other shrinks need to be invited to come and testify. And of course, you let the you let the maggots invite somebody and say, and you know what the maggot would say? Well, they shouldn't be here saying this. I say, because nobody who's worth a damn would come and testify that he's sane. It would not happen. I mean, they'd find some turley out there. By the way, to be a turley now is kind of like being a quisling. I don't know. I guess he's tenured at George Washington University. But God, his own colleagues must snicker behind his back now. He'll do anything for money. It's kind of like that one scientist from Yale who was brought on board by the coal industry to try to refute Michael Hendricks' work in regard to the health effects of mountaintop removal. And at one point in time, he volunteered, "Well, hell yeah, I took this job. I got to pay the rent somehow." I mean, not with the accent or anything, but yeah, he did that. He admitted he took coal money. Just because the check would clear. As to climate change, climate crisis, climate emergency, Robert writes in, "Global warming, climate change, not to worry, the Australian federal government has a plan. Do nothing. Sell more coal." As frustrating as it is over here, it's got to drive y'all just batshit, Robert. I know back when I was having a lot more frequent conversations with John Fox, he was driven half to distraction by the Liberal Party government. Remember, because, you know, upside down world, in Australia, the Liberals are the Conservatives. And what's that, Arthur? "Stop telling us when to not stay home and not vote, Bob." Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, there was the... Oh, Robert says, "It's Sydney Siders, not Sydney Spiders." That's autocorrect for you. I didn't know, because I still have nightmares after the one documentary that Ferg and I are still talking about it all these years later. It was one of those horrifying things on one of those documentary channels on cable that we happened to stumble across one day, and it was about some poor soul that got bit by a funnel web spider. And they had to take her all the way across Sydney Harbour, because the hospital they went to didn't have the funnel web spider anti-venom, and she was well on the way to death, because you don't want to get bitten by a funnel web spider. So there's all kinds of terrifying things in Australia. Snakes and spiders and shit. So for all I know, I thought maybe, I mean, I know about the South Sydney Rabbitohs and everything. I thought maybe there was a group of footballers that called themselves the Sydney Spiders. My apologies, Robert. It's another one of those moments of cultural, the expansion of my cultural horizons. At least if I ever get down there, I won't make the mistake of referring to anybody as a Sydney Spider. I'm glad you straightened that up for us, Robert. Thank you. By the way, Duncan Hunter has entered a guilty plea because, of course, he's a Republican. You'll recall Duncan Hunter used a bunch of campaign money to fuel his lavish lifestyle, including paying for some of the fappage that he was doing with women who weren't his wife, and then he threw his wife under the bus and blamed her. Sparky sent this story along from Roll Call. "The House Ethics Committee notified Representative Duncan Hunter that his recent guilty plea means he should no longer cast votes in the House. Here's the funny part, it's not mandatory, but the panel threatened action against him if he continues to vote." His last vote was Wednesday in favor of a measure to crack down on robocalls. But he didn't take part in any of the roll call votes that the House had on, today. Aw, damn. I bet that's just really gonna break his balls that he's not gonna get to vote against impeachment. The record will forever read, in favor of impeachment, this number, opposed, that number, not voting, will be at least one, and that one will be Dirty Duncan Hunter. He's looking at a maximum of 5 years in at Club Fed. He also faces a maximum $250,000 fine and a maximum of 3 years supervised release. What's weird is that he hasn't just altogether bailed out and resigned. But you know why he hasn't? Because the check's still clearing. Capitalist economic system, capitalist government. Congratulations. And this all comes after Margaret Hunter, his wife, pled guilty in June. She pled guilty to one count of conspiracy to misuse campaign funds. The world is still waiting for an anticipated public statement about his future in Congress following a meeting that Duncan Hunter had with GOP leadership. Yeah. Man, we've covered some ground already by the halfway mark of the program. And at the halfway mark of the program, we got $40. 40 thin, slim, little bitty dollars. Just $40 to go to finish fundraising for this evening so that we go into just a normal Friday on the front porch. $40. So hopefully that'll roll in short order. Thanks, everybody, who has gotten us to that point. And let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program. Wait a minute. There you are.
Okay, it's Dave from the Blind.
Hey, Dave, what's happening, man?
Well, I didn't get to meet my half-sister.
Oh, darn, I'm sorry.
And I'm getting some echo.
You're good on this end.
Okay, I'll just ignore it then. Jennifer called off because she was sick and didn't want to get us sick. My brother thinks she's afraid to meet us. And I can understand that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big unknown.
And so I'll just be patient. But I thought I'd let you guys know what's going on.
Well, I'm glad you did.
How was your Thanksgiving?
You know, Thanksgiving, I was on the air here. We didn't do much. I mean, I think we had bologna sandwiches for Thanksgiving. But on Saturday, I made
But you celebrated on the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, on Saturday, I did it up. I mean, it's not easy to do a whole Thanksgiving dinner on one smoker. But it was pretty darn tasty. The turkey was fantastic and pretty. Prettiest turkey I think I've ever done.
Well, cool.
And the dressing.
I guess it's all a matter of timing with the egg corn, then.
It is. And it's also a matter of, what's the appropriate term for it? It's a matter of logistics and staging. You gotta do things in a certain order. So, you know, it's like biscuits, then cornbread, then the turkey, and that gave me the time while the turkey was going to get all the bread torn up and work and you know, chop the celery and chop the onions and get the sage and the black pepper. I think I got carpenter's tunnel syndrome just cranking the goddamn black pepper grinder. I mean, I love fresh black pepper, but you know what? Damn. When you just need a good bit of fresh black pepper, sitting there and turning the crank on that damn pepper mill will wear you out.
Yes, it will, but it's good exercise, Bob.
Well, I'll take your word for it. I mean, yeah.
Well, you burn 2 or 3 calories.
Yeah, both of them, right. Yeah, sure.
You don't have to worry so much.
Yeah. Yeah, you burn both calories. But I was sitting there just cranking away and cranking away and cranking away. And this is one of those moments when it's a good thing that there's no video of the program, because it really looks pretty obscene with me doing the hand gesture for me cranking the goddamn pepper mill.
Oh, yeah. What are you doing?
Talking about the pepper mill, dear.
Oh.
That's all? No, really. I promise.
You're going to go blind.
See, I'm talking to Dave from the Blind.
Oh, sorry.
She said I'm going to go blind.
Hello, Agnes.
Dave says hi, Agnes.
Hi, Dave.
Now, Bob, you know, she's right. If those peppercorns get in the eyes, you're screwed.
I'll take that to heart. Jesus.
But that's when you start using a Morton pestle.
Well, I tried that once, but the little bastards are so hard that when you start grinding, they just fly out of the damn bowl. I tried using an electric...
That's when you put your hand over the other side of it.
See, I'm still working on...
You put your hand over one side.
Yeah, see, I'm still working on that whole intelligent walking upright primate thing. That never occurred to me, Dave.
Well, is that because you're from the... West Virginia branch of humanity, or what?
No, I think it's because I'm from the English major branch of humanity. That kind of shit doesn't dawn on us highfalutin artistic types. That's artistic.
Well,
that's
it,
artistic.
Bob, you're getting in trouble with the beloved Christine.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, I've had no. I mean, there's a whole bunch of English major art types who said, nah, yeah, I got the same problem. You know, I fall down. Normal people fall going downstairs. I fall going upstairs.
Well, I've only seen that happen when folks are drunk.
Well, see, that's the thing. If you're an English major, you can do it stone cold sober, and it's really embarrassing.
Oh, it just comes with the degree, then.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. It's part of the rewiring of the brain.
Hey, I was an ed major and a social studies major.
It still happens from time to time. I can be walking down a perfectly smooth, absolutely unimpeded surface, and I can trip and fall on my face over a single molecule.
Well, I trip on my own 2 feet regularly.
Yeah, but you've at least got an excuse, dude.
No, it's not an excuse. I have no dexterity to speak of. I fell so hard against my cane once, it bent. And that's not easy to do. I hit it just right. And I was walking at a 45-degree angle for about a week. But did I hear correctly that they blurred the Nazis out, to protect their identities, or what?
Yeah, I guess Nazis get their identities protected now.
Well, shit, Bob. What's next? Donations to the Fuhrer are going to...
Well, no, you ask what's next. There was actually... I caught a snippet of a program on... public radio the other day, and it was all about journalistic ethics and whatnot, and there was some sort of a kerfuffle about student publications at Northwestern University and Boston University, and like little right-wing turds were angry that they got their pictures taken and their names were put in the paper when they were in a public space with no reasonable expectation of privacy. See, they want to be Nazis.
I mean,
they want to be fascists, but they don't want the world to be told that they're fascists. It's kind of the way that a Klansman it's kind of the way that Klansmen are all brave and bold, and they'll march up and down the street and burn crosses and torment people with hoods over their head. They just don't want you to know that they're Klansmen. You know, they don't want the hoods pulled off and find out that he's the local doctor, that he's the local lawyer, the local judge, the local accountant, the local banker, the local car salesman.
Or the local minister.
Or the local minister, or the local city councilman.
But when I did my research into D.C. Stevenson, I saw pictures of the Klan, of the Ku Klux Klan's women's auxiliary in Muncie, Indiana, my hometown. And they had their faces out as bold as brass. In the 1960s, they tried to burn down St. Lawrence Catholic Church in Muncie. and they couldn't get the fire lit.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but that's one of those things that's important for us to remember about the Klan and these white supremacists. Again, as I've pointed out on a number of occasions, white is a sliding scale. So, for instance, when Donald Trump's filthy old daddy Fred was arrested for being in a Klan riot in Jamaica, Queens in 1927, in full Klan regalia, I might add.
So he had the sheets.
And the patches and, you know, the stripes and... Right.
Probably carrying a torch, too.
Well,
and
that
we're not talking the tiki variety.
No, but we need to understand that Klan rally was not directed against African Americans. I mean, the Klan hated African Americans, but in that particular instance, that Klan rally was directed against the New York City Police Department and every Irish member thereof.
Read Catholic.
Irish Catholic. Bingo. Because being Irish and Catholic at the same time was enough to wash all your whiteness away as far as the Klan was concerned.
Well, there's a book called When the Irish Became White.
Right.
And it's about how the Irish assimilated into the United States.
Right. And in many senses, the history of America, Dave, is a history of people struggling toward whiteness. For instance, most people know about the 1864 draft riots in New York City because the Union Army was a conscript army in 1864, but it had pernicious elements in it such that if you were rich enough, you could pay some other poor bastard to go and fight in your stead. Okay? And so when the draft riots took place in 1864... The Irish, many of whom were recent immigrants and were going and were doing a hell of a lot of the going and bleeding and dying, they were the ones who were rioting. And who did they riot on? They went after the first African American people that they laid eyes on and screamed, you know, you're the ones we're having to go and die for. We wouldn't be doing this if it weren't for you. And that's just history. It's
well,
real.
I know. I'm familiar with the riots. But and the thing is, it does not surprise me. But that kind of behavior should eliminate them from any kind of law enforcement responsibility, and I include corrections officers in that, you know. In that bunch, that should relieve them of any kind of law enforcement responsibility because you can't trust them to apply the laws equally or with some form of discernment.
No, and in fact, I was listening to 2A, or 1A, I'm sorry, 1A, wrong number. I was listening to 1A today on NPR, and they were interviewing a journalist from Alabama about the cold-blooded killing by Hoover, Alabama police of an African-American man. And in the course of trying to find out who the cop was who killed the man, they said, well, we're not going to release his name because he's part of an ongoing investigation. And then, of course, they wrote a report that cleared him and said it was okay for him to shoot a guy who didn't, who wasn't doing anything wrong, and just shooting, you know, one in the head and two in the back. They exonerated the cop, and so when journalists went back to try to find out his name, they said, "Well, you don't need to know his name; he was exonerated."
And this is why Zimmerman can get away with dragging Trayvon Martin's family into court.
Well, I mean, that's Florida, but yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Considering the president has become Florida man.
When has he ever not been?
Well, the thing is, well, now he's making it official. He wants to stay out of New York.
Right. He so doesn't. He doesn't realize. He doesn't.
Becoming Florida man.
He doesn't realize that after he's gone, he can be extradited from Florida to New York.
Well, there's that whole
because he's Florida dumb man.
There's that whole part of the Constitution that gives him that authority. Yeah.
Hey, Dave, you have yourself a good evening, man. I'm going to try to get to the next call here. I appreciate you calling in, and I'm, you know, just be patient.
All right, man.
Just be patient. I hope you'll get to meet your sister sooner or later, and sooner rather than later.
I know I will, but I'll keep you guys informed.
All right. Thanks,
Dave.
Take care,
everybody.
Take care now.
Bye.
Bye. I always enjoy my conversations with Dave. And, hey, we haven't heard from Thomas over at FYI Nation since God was a baby. Hey, Thomas.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, how are you? I hope you can hear me okay.
I hear you just fine.
Awesome. I'm on Skype, and I quit my job on Saturday.
Is there a relationship between the two? I mean...
I don't want to talk bad about the company because I actually love the job. The people, not so much. And it got to a point where I just knew it wasn't going to be the right fit, and I quit.
Sometimes you got to do that.
Yeah, and my nights are more free. So it leads me to listen to you, and I admit
it. It reminds me of what W.C. Fields said in The Bank Dick. He said, back in the old Mac Sennett days, I used to direct movie pictures. Yeah. Nights I used to tend bar. So you quit your bartending job, have you?
Yes, and I don't know if you noticed, but we are doing on FYI Nation, we've changed the website around where I am writing funny comedy bits about Trump, mostly, and Melania. So if anybody wants to go check that out, we have that on our website. It's kind of like The Onion, but a lot more harsh. So exclusively right now against Trump and Melania, but we'll branch out eventually.
Well, I don't charge royalties on the use of melanoma.
I do about two a day, one to two a day, and our biggest one that actually got us over 2,000 hits was our very first Melania Trump article, where she didn't attend a homeless shelter feeding, and it was a fake news, obviously, and she didn't attend, and everybody was happy that she didn't attend. And that greeted us with over 2,000 page views.
Well, we have a query from a listener who shall remain anonymous. Ask Thomas why he never straightened out the FYI Nation Patreon account. My credit card never gets charged.
Because it's not let me. The easiest way to donate right now is through PayPal, if you want to donate. Because Patreon, for whatever reason, charges my credit card for somebody who I contribute to, but nobody else's. I don't know why. It's not just you. I have about three donors on there that don't get charged, and I would love them to figure it out. But that's been a long, consistent problem after updating things and postings and everything else. But it has not worked. But we do have a link on the FYNation.com listen page for you to be able to send us a direct donation and how to do that. So there's always that. But I didn't call for that. I need thoughts and prayers, Bob.
You need thoughts and prayers?
Yes, for the Horn Community Commune. I'm up for a job tomorrow, and it will be the highest amount that I've ever been paid an hour. And I'm finally getting paid what I'm worth if I get this job.
Oh, goody.
So it would be really nice and helpful, because then I could be nice and helpful with causes that, like yours, that I believe in. Because I've been wanting to contribute. I was just not making enough money, which really sucks when you have bills to pay.
I understand completely. So, yeah, you get all the... Well, I mean, I'm not very good. I'm good on the thoughts, not so much with the prayers.
Well, fair enough. But I'll take whatever. However you want to do it, you know.
Sending good big energy.
Yes, exactly. I'm equal opportunity getter. I will get it and take it, however, and it would be really appreciated, because I hate not working. I just want to be paid what I'm worth in a healthy environment for a change. That would be nice.
Okay, here may be your problem with Patreon.
Oh, what would be my problem with Patreon? I would love to find out my problem with Patreon.
The account is listed as 24/7, and unless it gets changed to monthly, my card won't be charged.
I will look into that tonight.
And I need to bring something to your attention. I'd actually been meaning to get in touch with you.
Oh, please.
I don't know if maybe you've been listening. Maybe you're aware. I've been trying to announce it every night. The live program time is changing by an hour.
By an hour? No, I did not know that. But what is it changing to?
Eastern time is going beginning Monday. It'll go from 6 to 9 to back an hour to 5 to 8.
5 to 8. Okay, I can change that. That actually works for us. So that would be great. I will have it 5 to 8. Is this going to be a permanent thing or?
No, it's not. It is of limited duration, unless it turns out that like live listenership numbers go way, way, way up.
Okay.
And the other thing is, if that's the case, the other thing that's a possibility, and there would, you know, there would have to be a manifestation of it on the community end of it, is that it could also say come February, it could result in us going to a 4-hour program.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I can't do this guaranteed because obviously I don't have a job yet, but I promise you that FYI Nation will come up with some kind of program to help you guys out because you've helped us out with giving us live programming, to work out a subscriber thing because we believe in the subscribers helping each other. So I will email you off air about that. Once I hopefully have this job.
Yeah, I mean, don't put any undue or unnecessary pressure on yourself. Don't count any unhatched chickens.
Well, see, the funny thing is I got the job that I hate that I don't really want to take. They gave it to me and they offered it to me and I accepted. But this is the job that I really want that I'm kind of crying over for. That you finally
got that job playing piano in a whorehouse, didn't you?
You know me so well. That is the job. But no, it's a beautiful data entry job, and it's perfect for me. And the hours fit, and there's literally almost no commute. So it would be slam bam, thank you, ma'am. And I'd be home in time to listen to your show with the new hours.
Awesome.
So that would be another great thing because my the 3 to 11, as much as I love the shift, I hated the hours.
Oh, no, you know, I've mentioned before, my father, in his career as a furnace operator and a furnace foreman, I never understood why they did it this way. I think it was just cruel, but he worked what was called rotating shifts.
Mm-hmm.
So one week he would work the 8 to 5.
Oh, God.
And the next week, or he would work 8 to 4. The next week, he would work midnight to 8.
Oh.
The week after that, he would work the 4 to 12. 4 p.m. to midnight. And he did that for 30 years.
That would cause insanity to my brain.
Well, it wasn't good for him, and it made for some stressful times in a little 3-bedroom house, because when dad's got to sleep, that means everybody else tiptoes around the house and children don't do that. And so he had to, you know, my dad would sleep in their bedroom with the door closed, with the air conditioner blow. You know, this is before speakers and white noise machines and shit like that. So, you know, he'd sleep with the air conditioner 52 weeks a year, with the air conditioner, or at least the fan on the air conditioner, blowing as loudly as possible just to drown the house out.
Yeah. I used to work graveyard, so
the whole point of this is that he could cope with the 8 to 4. He could cope with the midnight shift. When I was little, I thought 4 to 12 was one word, because it usually appeared as two words, the damn 4 to 12.
Yeah, that would make me crazy, because the thing, you couldn't ever do anything, because what I wanted to do by the time I got home was go to sleep, but I couldn't go to sleep because I was too hopped up to be awake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so
there's always an element of that. I mean, there's some of that that applies to this program.
Yeah.
This program ends at 9 p.m. That means that 9 p.m. is my 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
In the ordinary world. Well, when people come home from work at 5 p.m., they're good for another 5 to 6 hours, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that puts me going to bed at 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm. Don't you know it?
And you can't live in this world that way. So, you know, my best bet is to shut everything down, run into the bedroom, watch a movie or some TV with Agnes. I look away for a minute, and she shoots me in the neck with a Thorazine dart. And I go all nappy bye.
Well, that's what you have to do. I was taking my daytime pills at night because the medication that I have, one of them made me sleepy enough where I would, if I was lucky, like you, go to bed at 3 a.m. And it's like, then I'd be up at 1:30 just in time to get ready to go to work in the afternoon. And I'd get nothing done. And I hated that part about the shift. The shift itself actually wasn't so bad, but I missed out on all the great things.
My day is all screwed up because one of the things about growing older, you'll find, is that you sleep less well.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the Hamlet syndrome. I could be bounded in a nutshell and count myself a king of infinite space were it not that I have bad dreams.
Amen to that.
And so I wake up. I don't have to have the alarm set or anything. I just bing, and it's usually about 5:56.
Mm-hmm.
Just in time to turn on my filthy morning habit. So I do that, and then I get up and go through the day and everything. And then by the time 4 o'clock rolls around, if I don't get like a 1 hour nap, I'm fucked.
Yeah. I've grown accustomed to the same thing where I'm waking up right about 7 o'clock in the morning. And if I don't get a little bit of a nap myself, I'm toast myself. And
I know they got that, you know, that ambient stuff out there, but that shit terrifies me. Randy and PA suggest maybe some melatonin supplements.
No, see, that only goes so far for me. It has only ever gone so far. And it sucks, but it just, I guess my thought on the side Thursday is that you can't find anything that unless you're doing it yourself, what works for you. And the thing I loved the most was when I had my own business and I was doing graveyard. That worked for me, but I wasn't bringing enough money in to do it.
Yeah. Oh, and so by the way, Shorty in L.A. says, I'm saying when you get the job, say when you get the job, not if you get the job.
Fair enough.
You know, you got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative.
Fair enough.
And don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
Amen to that. I've been a little in between all my life, so that's a little. But no, I'm glad I got to talk and share where I've been because I do miss calling in and getting to talk to you and all my Horn Community commune friends. And hopefully I'm in Patreon now trying to figure this out for the 24/7 part. I haven't seen where I edit that, but I will take a look at it and hopefully get this worked because I know there are some donors
on there. And Shorty adds, you will get the big money you've prayed for. Know this. You will get the big money you've prayed for. Know this and understand. Do not doubt ever. When there is doubt, you could live it out. So keep on trucking.
There you go. Because I'll tell you, this job is perfect
for me. Shorty is an inspiration each and every day.
Well, I'll tell you why this job is perfect for me, Bob. It's data entry, but it's actually a purpose. I'll be helping veterans and medical accounts with veterans.
Beautiful.
And it's something that I really want to do, and then eventually I can change my hours from 8 to 5 and pick whatever shift I want, and Monday through Friday type thing, which I wasn't able to do at my old job.
Okay, so all things being equal, just so you know, beginning Monday we go to that 5 to 8 schedule.
5 to 8 schedule, got it. I will change everything for that for Monday, and that works. And for listeners who miss Dr. Bill and want to listen to it semi kind of live, we do have Dr. Bill on at 4 p.m. Eastern, Saturday and Sunday. And usually I try to get the most recent episode on of his show. Commercial free.
Okay.
Obviously.
Okay.
So I know not everybody can.
Well, no, that's live. Great. I want people to be able to hear Dr. Bill, and you know, you under the best of all possible circumstances, Dr. Bill goes Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from 1 to 3.
Yeah.
However, between his schedule and his interruptions, and our schedule and our interruptions,
sure,
it's been hard to get those 3 days a week in. I hope that sort of normalizes. I'm skittish of that word, but I hope it gets to something resembling normal in fairly short order. Because especially at this point in time, he has so much to offer.
Yes, especially with the impeachment coming up, and it is when I get a chance to listen to it, one of my favorite shows. We do only have one live show other than that original show right now that is Reality Check with Rory, which you can hear the rebroadcast on Saturdays at, I want to say, 9 or 10. Our schedule hasn't been updated properly on TuneIn. To get anything updated is a prayer.
Oh, no. Believe me, I get it.
But everything is updated on our website. Well, needs to be updated on our website, but will be by this weekend now that I have all the free time in the world. And hopefully won't after the 16th of December. Because, you know, this job means everything to me. Hopefully I won't have to go to the other one because, yeah.
All right, Thomas, it's great to hear from you, my friend.
It is good to talk to you too, Bob. Thank you so much, as always.
You take care and have a good evening. And hey, best of luck going forward. We're rooting for you, all right?
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye now. The one and only Thomas from FYINation.com. Both lines are open if you want to get in on some Thorn in the Side Thursday conversation. Feel free to jump in. The stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. And then over on the other line that comes in, either 304-574-8178 or Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Affirming my faith in people with the DJ affliction everywhere, I did get a note after I conjured Lady B. Subject line, phone call interrupted my stream. Took the show off pause, and I'm just now catching up. My God, I hope we get through this. P.S., Katie lied. You can see it in her eyes. Imagine my surprise when I heard you quote a great fucking song. The name Steely Dan is a double entendre. And Lady B also adds, when you said, I'm cranking the old pepper mill, and Agnes answered back, you're gonna go blind, I knew right there it was kismet, and you two were meant to be. I wake up every day, and I consider myself, well, this is where you do the whole the Gary Cooper is Lou Gehrig thing. And I consider myself, self, the luckiest man and in the world. I do. And hey, big thanks to Anatole. Thank you, Anatole. Anatole finished fundraising for the evening and got us started on tomorrow. So tomorrow's fundraising goal is only $190. And that's awesome. Thank you, Anatole. Thank you so very, very much indeed. And away we go back over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy Thursday to you too, Bob. It's me, Reggie, from the chain of Georgia once again.
What's happening, Reggie?
What's happening to you? Oh, well, Bob, well, our girl, Nancy Pelosi, has become like the Incredible Hulk. You know, don't make her angry because you wouldn't like when she's angry. Then she told off that reporter.
Rosen. His name is Rosen, Reggie, and he works for Sinclair TV. And if people threw bags of garbage at him, that would be okay because he's not, he works for Sinclair TV. I mean, I know we all got to have a job and stuff, but Jesus, if you're willing to work for Sinclair as a Capitol Hill reporter, there's probably something wrong with you.
So he sold his soul to the devil. basically, right? Right, Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was saying don't fuck with me because she thought that she hated Donald Trump because of who he is, for what he is. She prayed for him. She doesn't hate him. She hates for what he's doing, but she doesn't hate the person. She doesn't hate the person. She just hates his policies. And why would such a stupid-ass reporter like him ask such a stupid-ass question like that? What was he trying to accomplish? What was he trying to do, Bob? What exactly was he trying to accomplish to do, Bob? Get her under her skin or ghost?
Oh, no. He's a bully. You got to understand, Reggie, he's a bully. It's kind of like, and all of these maggots are. You got to understand, like yesterday, they only screamed at the woman on the panel.
Right.
And so he's terrified of strong women, and that's why he attacks them so viciously.
Right. I wonder if he married one. I wonder if he's married to one. You know? And why did Melania Trump thought that professor was attacking her son, Darren Trump? What was she aiming at or for?
They were just trying to turpentine the maggots' asses. That's all.
Right. I mean,
because
did
I say Kaplan again? Professor Carlin.
Yeah, you did.
Sorry,
yeah, that's
it. I got a mental fixation.
Like George Carlin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, Professor Carlin. She apologized out of a sense of decency. I had an email about that earlier this evening.
Right.
She apologized out of an abundant sense of decency, and she did so in real time. She didn't wait or anything, and still it wasn't enough. And now they're out. Now the maggots are out there fundraising on her.
Why? Why exactly?
Well, because they fundraise on everything. Remember when Mitch McConnell fundraised on Cocaine Mitch and sold Cocaine Mitch T-shirts?
Right. Yeah, but cocaine is an illegal, deadly, lethal drug, which is illegal in all states and all over the world, practically. Why would he make a T-shirt that says Cocaine Mitch? Was he using the stuff? Is he still using the stuff?
No. I don't think Cocaine Mitch has ever used it. It's a reference to the fact that a ship that was owned by his wife's father's company was busted with a gajillion tons of Peruvian flake in the hold.
Oh, by the Coast Guard, I bet, right?
Maybe, think so.
They all call us snowflakes. But they're the biggest hypocritical snowflakes out there. Are they not, Bob, or am I wrong?
No, they live in a constant state of butthurt.
Why you say that, Bob?
Well, I mean, you know, don't you? I mean, they're constantly hurt and aggrieved and offended, you know, by something.
Yeah.
And in the case of the Trump campaign, they constantly are looking at everything that gets a little bit of a buzz in the zeitgeist winds up being a fundraising campaign by the Trump campaign.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And I thought we were supposed to be the biggest snowflake, but I guess it's them, not us. Yeah, like you said, they live in a constant state of five right wing news bubble, right, Bob? The mainstream news media news bubble. That's what the conservative Republicans, the GOP, live into, right? They don't live in the reality, do they? Unlike the rest of us, right, Bob?
Right.
They don't live in a constant state of reality. They live in a constant state of fiction. Just like their overlord and master, Donald J. Trump, who did bend over backwards and possibly forwards to doing his everyday evil fitting. And the sooner we impeach this guy, the better, right? But who's going to speak over if he's gone? If that ever happens?
No, he's not going to be gone, Reggie. He's not going to be gone. I mean, I could be wrong about this. I mean, you know why I'm saying it. Because the Republicans are not going to convict him in the Senate. It would take every Democrat, including Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, who are as much Republican as they are Democrat. It would take every Democrat plus like 22 more plus 22 Republicans to convict him and remove him from office. That ain't gonna happen.
What? Because they're scared of him.
You know, for any variety of reasons, maggots are loyal to their emperor. Republicans are always put party ahead of country.
Right.
And frankly, if you're a maggot senator from the Confederacy, where most of them are, your electorate would throw you out of office yesterday for voting to convict
him. Right. But how do you feel about Senator Kamala Harris dropping out of the race? How do you feel about that, Bob?
I think it's disturbing that this has become an all-white presidential campaign as soon as Cory Booker is gone, and I'm not counting Andrew Yang. The top of the race is a pair of soon-to-be octogenarians, one early septuagenarian, and one clueless young white guy who just really doesn't have any understanding of issues relative to race in this country.
Oh, you mean Pete Buttigieg? And why do you say that about him, Bob?
Well, I mean, come on. Why do you ask why I say that?
Well, you know, you say that he doesn't have any clue what it means to be black or any other minority race or group because of his, how shall we say, antiquated, outdated.
Well, no, because of his white privilege.
Philosophical notions about, yeah, exactly.
I mean, he said the other day, he stepped on a rake the other day, talking about how he thought that South Bend, Indiana, had solved its segregation problem with a court case. When it turns out that to this day, Indiana schools and South Bend schools in particular are among the most segregated in the country.
Right. I heard that the Black Lives Matter people heard they protested his speech. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, no.
You were saying?
He's got so much to learn.
Yes, he does.
He wouldn't know anything about the public schools in South Bend because he didn't attend them.
So he went to private school.
He went to a nice private religious school, and then he went from there to Harvard.
Oh.
And then he went from Harvard to Oxford, and not in Mississippi, in merry old England.
Oh. So yeah, you're right. He does have a lot to learn, a whole hell of a lot.
I mean, I'm guessing unless somebody in his campaign has set up a photo op at a soul food joint, he's never sat down to a meat and three in his life.
Right. You think he actually show up at a soul food restaurant to pull off a photo op, him and a bunch of black people eating soul food, which he probably never had before in his whole entire white privileged life, and probably doesn't even.
But I mean, I'm not trying to tear him down. It's just, and then of course, there's Mike. You know, there's Michael. There's AOB, Michael Bloomberg, another old billionaire, who knows what you poor people need. Poor people need soda pop taxes, so you'll quit because you won't stop drinking big soda pops unless we wealthy or smarter people tell you. Oh, Jesus Christ, I can't stand these monumental manifestations of privilege.
Right.
But Reggie, I got a roll, brother.
Is he the health police, Michael Bloomberg?
He's not the health. I mean, it comes from a good place. I mean, his opposition to climate change and his willingness to fund organizations that nominally battle coal is respectable, but he suffers from this problem whereby he thinks that the fact that he has vast wealth conveys some special wisdom upon him, and it doesn't.
Right. And is he responsible for the Stop and Frisk Act of New York, Michael Bloomberg?
Well, he praised it. I mean, he certainly kept it going during his tenure in office.
Right.
And right. only recently when he was given a gentle raking over the coals for it, did he say, maybe it wasn't so great.
Right.
Do
you think that Joe Biden should drop out of the race? Go ahead, Bob.
Do I think Joe Biden should drop out of the race? No, not until Joe Biden has been shown not to be a viable candidate.
Right.
But watching Joe Biden, I feel like I've been to this movie before. Only back then it was called Hillary.
Right, but what about his constant gaps? He uses the word malarkey.
malarkey's just a piece of American vernacular slang going back to 1924. It was probably I'm sure it was in near constant usage when he was 5 or 6 years old, which would have been before 1950.
And isn't like I said about Michael Bloomberg, isn't the current mayor de Blasio also responsible for the Stop and Frisk? Is he continuing it?
No. He tried to get it. I don't know how successful, but no, he earned the wrath of the cop union in New York because he opposed Stop and Frisk. But I got to get out of here, Reggie. It's good to talk to you. I'm going to try to make a little space for a few more callers.
Okay, man.
All right. Take care, man.
Okay.
See ya. Bye.
Keep warm.
I'm going to try to keep warm, Reggie. Thank you very kindly. Reggie always has his thumb on the pulse. He takes the information in. Does a good job with it. So we are about got a little bit more than a half an hour remaining in the program. Lines are open. Other stuff is out there. I mentioned the migrant kids. And this was bound to happen sooner rather than later. And what I mean is reports out from Syria saying that, no, we managed to kill us some civilians on that raid that Nitwit Nero took such pride in. One of our helicopters missiled the fuck out of a van full of Syrian civilians. One Syrian farmer says his arm was blown off. His two friends were killed by U.S. helicopter fire in the village where special forces performed the raid to take down Abu Bakr
al-Baghdadi
couple of months back. Looks like his account is solid. And of course it goes against the grain of what the government reported, namely that
this was a beautiful raid, a perfect raid, no one was hurt except al-Baghdadi, who begged like a dog.
Yeah. Hey, let's run over. It's been a while since we heard from Arnold. Hey, Arnold, what's happening, man?
Not much, Bob. How are you? Hello?
Yeah, you're there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. There's other people talking where I'm at. I'm sorry. So I heard what you said before about Sinclair.
Yeah.
I instantly called you. I need to share a thought with the listeners and you and it. So a lot of times you hear people assess working for anywhere, you know, the art of having a job, the privilege of having any job is like, at least I have a job, or it's my purpose, it's my calling, whatever. People are like, they tie themselves to this thing because at least they have a job. The problem is that certain jobs aren't worth doing, whether it's because of the money or the ethics or the entity you're serving. And you have to, whether it's good or bad for you, you have to know when to just put the key in the door, go home, stop on the way home, watch it, go to a movie. You have to be able to take your freedom for your head. You know, like people dump loved ones, relationships end, but people are afraid to do the same thing to their job. And it's the same thing. You have to at some point assess your head over the $9 an hour or the $100,000 a year or whatever. I couldn't work for Sinclair. They could. There isn't enough.
No,
money.
No, but Arnold, let's say, you know, you got a couple of kids and something that vaguely resembles a middle class life, and you've got and you're able to make the car payment and the mortgage payment and the insurance payments and the cable's on, and you get to eat meat, you know, maybe one or two times a week, and gosh, you've got some sort of employer provided health care. You've just been lashed to the mast, brother. I mean, it's like something I've told my own kids, that as a rule of thumb, where jobs are concerned, you never get off the lame horse you're on till you've got a fresh horse to ride.
Well, that's great advice. You know, but
Well, what I was going to say is it's part and parcel, though, of the maximum bullshit that all of these millionaires who've never had to sweat, you know, where the next meal's coming from, and preach to us every day about how, you know, we can't have health care for all, we can't have universal health care, we can't have Medicare for all, because, you know, gol darn it, those union members out there, they love their union health care. And those fuckers have never worked on a real union. I mean, they might, you know, if you're a regular on one of these TV programs, even Rush Limbaugh is a member of AFTRA, okay?
I've actually had this conversation with Rick where it's like, so these devils spew this crap continuously, and they literally benefit from what they are criticizing. It's amazing. I hate Rush Limbaugh, by the way.
Well, everybody, Mrs. Limbaugh down in the pit probably hates him worse than you do. It puts the lotion on its skin, my friends. But no, it drives me crazy because it's like Boss Man Wayne was saying to me, you know, that union, if you're in the building trades, that union health care is great until you get laid off.
Yeah.
And if you live anywhere but goddamn South Georgia, South Alabama, South Mississippi, Florida, Southern Texas, and you've got a union construction job, odds are your happy ass is going to get laid off.
Yep.
Because it's called seasonal work for a reason. And once that's, and when you get laid off, you don't have that groovy health care that the millionaires keep telling us that union workers love so fucking much.
You know, and I'm going to steal this from somebody we all know, but basically universal health care for applied over a union contract means they can renegotiate and take that $24,000 or $25,000 per employee liability off the table. They can pass some of that on to the directly onto the employees.
Yeah, you're making more money.
Yeah.
Boss Man Wayne told me. I'm trying to remember. Of course, he's been retired for a little bit. But when he retired from the Carpenters and Millwrights, and we've got some Carpenters and Millwrights members in the Horn Family Community Congregation, Arnold. He said when he retired that he was paying north of $8 an hour out of his hourly rate of pay, $8 plus of it was going to his union health care that Donnie fucking Deutsch and Joe fucking Scarborough keep telling us that they love so much.
Right.
In other words, if we had Medicare for all, that's $8 an hour in that worker's pocket.
Yeah, it's most of the Teamsters contracts you'll hear about, right, Bob? It's about $24,000 a year for the coverage that they're provided. So imagine that you could actually have an additional $24,000 in your paycheck.
Yeah, I'm cheating and hauling out my calculator right quick. So that's $24,000 a year. That's $24,000 divided by 52 equals divided by 40 equals. That's $11.50 an hour.
Isn't that amazing? People I know work for less than that.
Yeah. I mean, that's more than a minimum wage worker earns in this state.
I have a friend right now that's doing about 33 hours a week at $9 an hour and trying to put a whole life together out of it.
You can't.
Right. And we're told on the TV that or in the radio that that's no problem. Just get it together. You pull yourself up. Yeah, I'll get like five of those jobs right quick. And that's, I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I said before about, you know, just quit when you want to quit. But there is a point in this life where it is too short sometimes to put up with unnecessary shit. And it is to be said that if you don't like politics, it starts to rub you too much, you have my blessing to walk away. But your advice is also really cool, though, about, you know, not, you know, don't jump off until you got another one. That's the truth to that. But you also have to be able to.
Well, sometimes
you're ready to go.
Sometimes you don't have the luxury of that kind of choice.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, it's like something that Agnes said that, you know, she told an employer one time. She said, they said something shitty to her, and she responded, "Bub, I was looking for a job when I found this one, and I can find another one." And there's truth in that, and of course something like the pro labor bill that's languishing on Nancy Pelosi's desk right now would make a good union life available to a hell of a lot more Americans. The reason that thing probably has not come to a vote on the floor is that she knows that it's just another goddamn bill that's going to go die on Mitch McConnell's desk. Just like bills to try to cut, you know, not eliminate, but cut back on the number of babies that get slaughtered in schools in this country is lying in a pool of blood on his goddamn desk.
Yeah, and we really have to ask ourselves why somebody who's that bitter and old and just dysfunctional still has so much control over the balance of power in our country.
Well, you know, it's weird because everybody thinks of McConnell as being from Kentucky.
I don't know where he's from originally.
He is from Sheffield, Alabama, across the river from where I grew up.
Oh, wow.
And I think of him much more as being the product of his upbringing as opposed to the product of, I don't know, Kentucky. Because, I mean, the meanest and worst of Southern racists, Southern demagogues, Confederates came not from Kentucky, but from hardcore places like South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And lo and behold, I read so much current events and so much news that when the end of the day comes, and I talk about, you know, sometimes Agnes and I watch a movie, whatever. 9 times out of 10, what we both do instead of watching TV or a movie or a TV show or something, that's why I'm so desperately behind and so utterly non-conversant in pop culture these days. We read books.
Yep.
And so I'm reading one right now called The Field of Blood, Violence in Congress and the Road to Civil War.
Wow.
And it's fascinating because, for one thing, it addresses the sectionalism that just chewed away at this country and in the decades before the Civil War. And very few people know. God, I sound like Trump now.
You know, people don't know, but
there are people who know, but it's not something a lot of people think about. Part of the problem in Congress in the pre-Civil War era was the fact that Congress was almost exclusively controlled by the South.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rules had been set up to favor slave owners. Because that's what we had to do in order to get the slavers to come along and form the country with us. Now, I know this sounds like a great big old Bob Kincaid diversion, but trust me, I'm going somewhere with this, Arnold.
All right, I'm down.
So I'm toddling along, and I get to this portion of the book, and I read the following. Even staid Northerners sometimes went to extremes. Many of our best men are giving a loose rein to their ambition and their appetites, worried Robert McClelland, a Democrat from Michigan, in a letter filled with misbehaving Northerners. Amasa Dana, a Democrat from New York's friends, despaired when he befriended Felix Grundy McConnell. How about that?
Oh, boy.
Moscow Mitch is not the first awful McConnell in the Congress of the United States.
I wonder if it's cousins.
Felix Grundy McConnell was a Democrat from Alabama.
You know, talk about stumbling on something that you probably shouldn't have stumbled on.
Oh, my pink little ears just went straight up. And so get this description of Felix Grundy McConnell.
Go ahead.
A hard-drinking, all-around, all-night man about town. McConnell liked to swagger into saloons and invite everyone to come up and liquor. One fellow liked him fine when he was sober, but refused to commit McConnell's witty vulgarisms to his journal. Once at a party, this is a congressman, okay? Once at a party, thoroughly soused and with a woman on each arm, McConnell teetered up to President James K. Polk and toasted him, insisting that Polk drain his glass in a gulp, calling out, "No heel taps, Jimmy!" With McConnell by his side, Dana transformed from a sober, steady, modest, and sedate man into a perfect rake. Franklin Pierce, one of our known alcoholic presidents and multi-great-grandfather of Barbara Bush, Franklin Pierce didn't fare much better. He hit an alcoholic low in 1836 when he and two drinking buddies, Edward Hannigan, a Democrat of Indiana, and Henry Wise, a Whig of Virginia, the three of them, a case study in national diversity, got drunk and caused a ruckus at a theater when Hannigan got into a fist fight and pulled a gun, and the rumble nearly sparked a duel. Now,
oh my God.
It goes on like this. Let me see here. And they were constantly at each other's throats. But I'm trying to find...
But, Bob, I got to cut you off and say this.
Yeah.
I was at one of those fake schools, you know, like they teach you how to be like a trade school, not a trade school, but like a Fortis, you know, you go there and they give you some half-assed degree, okay?
Right.
So I'm helping a friend through the entrance exam, and I'm sitting in the cubicle across from him, and I'm watching him go through what he's doing. And I was just there for support. And one of the salespeople comes over to me and is trying to sell me this school. And what the guy says to me is he goes, we don't have English. There's no English classes here. There's no history classes here. There's none of that bullshit. I started laughing. And I said, so there's no history classes. He says, yeah, no one wants to know that stuff. I said, you know why you learn history? And he said, why? I said, so you're not doomed to repeat it.
Nice. Nice. And, of course, the fact that they were proud of not having any English, not having any history, not having... Right. No, we don't teach you none of that sissy stuff.
Well, none of that sissy stuff.
And so let me wrap up Felix Grundy McConnell. I don't know if you were listening a few weeks ago when I brought up the issue of Charles the Bad.
I think I was, yeah.
And I said, you know, when you think about the eventual end of Donald Trump, just go and look up the end of Charles the Bad, and it might just make your day a little better.
Okay.
And people did, and it did. So here's another one of those things. If you want to think about the ends of people named McConnell, well, this story was delivered by the president. It was related by the president of the United States, James K. Polk. And so in 1846, according to Polk, a shaky and pale McConnell, probably just recovered from a fit of intoxication, came to the White House, borrowed $100, dallied at a bar, loaned some money to the barkeep, retired to his room, and butchered himself with a pocket knife and died.
Oh, my God.
I mean, come on, be honest. If you turned on the news in the morning and found out that Moscow Mitch had gotten drunk out of his mind and just chopped himself to pieces with a pocket knife, are you telling me you'd put on widow's weeds and be all sad? No, yeah, exactly, no. That can happen. I'm okay with that happening.
Fine. Yeah, me too.
You know, by your own hand, Moscow Mitch, when you finally can't live with yourself anymore.
Yeah, but he's not going to get to that point. See, the thing that scares me about him is, and people like him, is they don't realize the generational damage that they're doing. And if they do, they figure, I'm going to be out of here soon. It doesn't matter. And they don't have any respect for their legacy. They just want to be assholes while they're here. It's a very strange thing to witness, for sure.
Man, a pocket knife, though, that would fucking hurt.
Yeah, it would. I hope it was dull.
Wait a minute. Yeah, not much of an edge at all. Have to saw away at it. But, you know, the Southerners are like that.
On a good note, Bob, yeah. On a good note, I got to share. I have the baby for the weekend.
Oh, wonderful. Yep. Wonderful. Enjoy your time with her.
Yeah, man, it was really actually a good time. So that's what I'm doing. I'm gonna bounce off and give her a bath. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, man. You have a good night. It's always good hearing from you, Arnold.
Thanks, Bob. I love the show. I'm gonna keep listening.
All right, you take care now. Bye.
Yep. Good night. Bye.
That's our buddy Arnold up in PA. I guess I've betrayed myself as a mean-spirited prick, but I'm sorry. I couldn't help it when I read about Felix Grundy McConnell, who was a terrible, terrible asshole, coming to his end by chopping himself to pieces with a pocket knife. I couldn't help thinking, you know, maybe history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. I guess that people would probably get visits from the Secret Service if they were to do something like, you know, mailing old timers to Moscow Mitch. Yeah, I guess. And going back to what Reggie was talking about with the cocaine ship, Shorty in L.A. reminds us the vessel is named the Ping Mei, owned by McConnell's in-laws, the Chow family. No mistake at all that Elaine is the Secretary of Transportation. And it goes back to 2014. Headline, Mitch McConnell's freighted ties to a shadowy shipping company. After drugs were found aboard the Ping Mei, a vessel owned by his wife's family's company, Colombian authorities are investigating. Foremost Maritime Corporation. Yeah. Meanwhile, Ralps looked up old Felix Grundy McConnell. You can too. Apparently, he has a presence on the interweb tubes. He has not been forgotten. But he came to Alabama at that point in time. Nobody was from Alabama. Everybody came there from somewhere else. Via I think Nashville. And then remember, Moscow Mitch was born in Sheffield, Alabama, back at a time when Sheffield was quite the place, had a lot of industry, that sort of thing. And he was afflicted by polio, Moscow Mitch was. And through the good offices of the, I guess, the March of Dimes, he got to go for therapy to Warm Springs, Georgia. And he grew up to be a miserable, shit-eating, hateful Republican who, like so many of them, spent their lives kicking at the hands on the rungs below the ladder that they themselves had been helped to climb. He's a great example of it. So too is Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas. What's that? Billionaires and stuff and attitudes and healthcare. This via Arthur. From the British sitcom The It Crowd, CEO of the company. When I started this company, I only had two things, a dream and £6 million. I thought you were going to make reference to something. I saw a little piece of video of interviews done with folks in the UK, and the interviewers explained healthcare in the United States to them. And I can't seem to find it right now, but it made such an impression on me. When it was explained to one person being interviewed, all about how, you know, if you don't have, you know, for an inhaler or you know, it's all got to come out of your pocket for an inhaler or insulin or something like that. This British subject responded perfectly. So in the United States, if you're poor, you just die. That's what the person said. And the answer, of course, is yes, because freedom. Absolutely, because freedom. Because freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Meanwhile, how about a little good news to wrap things up this evening? You know, there was a shooting yesterday at Joint Base Pearl Harbor Hickam in Hawaii. A sailor, an active duty sailor, killed two and wounded another, and then killed himself. And not much else has been released about it as of at least my last checkup before airtime. But recently, there was another terrifying situation at a school in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Oshkosh West High School had a situation the individual on Twitter noting a school shooting took place in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, but not making the headlines is what happened at the same time, because across the street from Oshkosh West High School is the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community's mosque. Saad Ahmad, who's finance secretary at the mosque, said he got a call from his daughter Tuesday morning. She called to tell her daddy that she had unlocked the doors of the mosque to let in students who were fleeing for their lives from Oshkosh West High School across the street. Her dad showed up, and by the time he got there, there were 100 students in the mosque. And staff there took down the partitions that are usually there to keep the men from having to see the women, or the women from seeing the men, whatever. They took the partitions down. So that more fleeing students could have space to take shelter in the mosque. And then they went about the business of comforting and calming the students and providing them food and drink. I guess Pamela Geller won't report on that. It probably won't make it onto the news there at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, or Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. No, no. But, you know, we always have stories about how, this Baptist church or that, whatever. But it has a hard, when good things like this happen, and we know how I feel about religion, but when good things like this happen, and it's a mosque doing it, not so much. So at least maybe we've done our little part to remedy it. Darlene in Connecticut with a note saying, and Paul Ryan too. Oh yes, Paul Ryan too. And speaking of school violence, Bill Lee, and not Bill the Spaceman Lee, who was a character and a pitcher in Major League Baseball. Instead, this is the Bill Lee, who's a maggot governor of Tennessee. And his thing, you know, Lamar Alexander's thing was flannel shirts. We had a buddy years ago who referred to him as the Plaid Avenger. Bill Lee's shtick is that he says he's going to roll up his sleeves and get stuff done. Now, this isn't so much about rolling up sleeves as it is planting one's lips in a certain part of a demographic's anatomy. The Associated Press has the story. Bill Lee went to give some remarks at the Southern Baptist Convention's headquarters there in Nash, Vegas. And so, in an act of pandering, in the truest sense of the word, and not the melanoma Trump attacking Professor Carlin sense of the word. In an act of pandering, speaking to the folks there at the Southern Baptist Convention headquarters and talking about the opioid epidemic and as well the National Rubel Association fueled school shooting pandemic, Bill Lee declared, "If thousands of people offer similar prayers, God will impart his favor on Tennessee." AP says, Jesus Christ. So he's going to pray the Christian murderers away, I guess. Because remember, most of the folks committing these mass shootings in America are, of course, Christians. Yeah. I don't know how that'll play among the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians in Tennessee. But he's kind of calling them out, isn't he? Y'all ain't praying enough, you Christians! Pray more! Or and this comes from, the version of Robin Hood that had Kevin Costner and Morgan Freeman in it. And at one point in time, Morgan Freeman, who plays a Moor, a Muslim, I think he says it to Robin Hood, "Pray louder, Christian. Your God can't hear you." And of course, maybe if the Christians in Tennessee would stop supporting keeping children in concentration camps, maybe their invisible friend would listen. Yeah, or not. Oh, and one last thing. There's a new ad out from Grandpa Joe. And I'm going to run it, you know, and just give him the freebie. It's not like Grandpa Joe's going to write us a check or anything. But it's a pretty well-made ad. And you can bet this will be good for maybe another 5 or 10 points on the systolic and diastolic side of venereal Vespasian's blood pressure.
World leaders caught on camera laughing about President Trump.
Several world leaders mocking President Trump.
They're laughing at him.
My administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country.
Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
World leaders mocking and ridiculing him for being completely off balance.
Allies are deeply worried about it. They say he's becoming increasingly isolated. Something is very wrong.
The world sees Trump for what he is, insincere, ill-informed, corrupt, dangerously incompetent, and incapable, in my view, of world leadership. And if we give Donald Trump 4 more years, we'll have a great deal of difficulty if ever being able to recover America's standing in the world and our capacity to bring nations together.
We need a leader the world respects. Biden, president. Well, It's a good ad because it uses real things, real moments to point out what a nightmare Nitwit Nero truly, truly is. So that's it for the evening. Thanks again to all of you who chipped in this evening to finish out fundraising. Thanks to Anatole for getting us started on tomorrow. That's really helpful. Thank you. So tomorrow's fundraising goal for Friday on the Front Porch is $190. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteroadsociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.